So this morning we're going to settle right into our meditation practice. And later in the session, I will give us a chance to do a guided meditation around emotions for those who are interested in that. So finding whatever slight movements or thoughts, inspirations help you arrive here with a heart mind that's interested, curious, alert, and soft, relaxed, receptive. So there's this balance of alertness and tranquility that we cultivate. And sometimes at the beginning we cultivate it intentionally, maybe a couple of deep breaths if that's what helps us to settle. We can even start with a minute of seated qigong. As I described, I think it was the first night, just turning our head side to side, just feeling that movement. Just a slight stretch. And then the head up and down. Notice how it affects the whole body to do this. And then ear to ear, ear to shoulder, I mean. And then little circles with the chin. The other direction. And coming to stillness. Perhaps noticing with a body scan any place there might be excess holding that you can invite to release if it wants to, or to soften. Let the forehead broaden. The jaw relax. The neck lengthen. Shoulders broaden and drop. Broadening is one way of relaxing the shoulders, letting them get wider. You can notice with any of these slight relaxation movements how it affects the whole body. Perhaps inviting some softness in the chest and abdomen. Letting the lower back drop towards the earth. And then the connection with the chair or cushion, bench, and the earth through the feet if you're in a chair. The earth is our constant companion, our friend that holds us close. We can relax into the holding of the earth. Perhaps helping us connect with a sense of stability, groundedness, strength. Perhaps receiving the earth's energy as a form of friendliness. And then we can allow our attention to move towards the place that we're calling our home base or our anchor, letting the awareness connect with this experience. Receiving this experience. Developing intimacy with this experience. You could say that intimacy is an expression of mindfulness. And with intimacy, we move close or receive, become in touch with. And then there's a friendliness and a curiosity in that word. And even if we've taken thousands or millions of breaths, this one is what's present now. This body sitting and the hands touching is present now. And then other experiences arise and we develop this intimacy with these other experiences, because in our Vipassana meditation, everything is included. Nothing is exiled. Nothing is out of the scope of our investigation, our curiosity. So let's say other sensations in the body arise. We can let the awareness rest with that area of sensation and receive that experience. What is this pain in the knee? How does it manifest? How does it change? Can I let it be? Or do I find myself arguing with it? There's no right answer. The right answer is exactly what is happening. let the knee pain teach us about life, about struggle, about freedom. A thought arises, oh yes, thinking, that too, part of this life. Notice how dense it is when we're lost in it, but what happens when we become aware? And if we find ourselves confused or thinking about our experience, trying to understand it through the mind, then we just let it go. Come back to our anchor, get really simple, simple, simple. You could say disentangling by connecting with the home base, letting go of the tangles in the mind. This is such great practice. Learning that we don't have to take our thoughts seriously. Just arisings, conditioned arisings. Let's get simple. Just now, here, sensing body. And this effortless awareness is just here, isn't it? So we'll practice in silence for maybe 20, 25 minutes, and then we'll do a little guided meditation. if you wish to follow along with a guided meditation on emotion, please join. Otherwise, my voice can just be hearing. But you can check if there's some emotion that's obvious present, maybe, like anger or fear, happiness. Or maybe it's just a subtle mood, background mood, or maybe it's calm. And emotions in Buddhism include mind states such as restlessness or sleepiness, concentration. So you can just check if there's any emotion present, mood or emotion, and if so, it's often helpful to label it. This is anger. This is happiness. It can help, you could say, put a frame around it so that we can look more deeply, become more intimate with what this experience is. And so we like to start with grounding in the body. Are there any sensations that are associated with this emotion? Perhaps if there's happiness, the body feels light, easy. Perhaps if it's anger, there's a clenching feeling, or heat. If it's restlessness, perhaps the body feels jumpy, itchy, wanting to move. So we connect with the sensations in the body. What's it like to experience the emotion embodied? We can notice what's going on in the mind. Perhaps we notice the feeling in the mind, whether it's contracted or expansive, flexible, inflexible, tight. And we might notice the kinds of thoughts that arise. We don't really care about the particular story. That's not of interest to us right now. But maybe with anger, we notice that there's a lot of self-righteous thoughts. Or with happiness, we might notice that there are thoughts about permanence, that this is going to go on forever. We've made it. And perhaps with restlessness, we just notice that there's a lot of scattered thoughts, one after another. So how do we experience it in the body? What's happening in the mind? And I'm using a lot of words, but the process is, if possible, it's more direct. It's more feeling and seeing than thinking about. And then we can notice, how does it change as we're with it? Does it strengthen, weaken, go away, shift to another emotion? What happens when awareness meets this emotion? And then we notice, how are we relating, or what is the relationship with this emotion? If it's unpleasant, are we bracing against it, hating it, wanting to get rid of it? What's that like? Or if it's pleasant, are we trying to hang on, wanting it to stay? What's that like? Or possibly there's equanimity, letting be, that there are seconds where we're just with this emotion and there's space for it to be. You could say that we are able to leave it alone and let it have its life. No right answers. Whatever is happening is the right answer. And so we'll stay with this emotion as long as we're interested. But perhaps we start thinking about it a lot. Why is this happening? Where did it come from? Or we start having a lot of aversion. Then maybe it's time to see about just letting it go and coming back to your anchor, if possible, for some stability. Or you can even open your eyes and look around if it's a particular vortex that you need to get out of. It's good to know how to do that. You can even stand up, look out the window, coming back to here and now if you've been carried off. So we have a few more minutes if you would like to continue to practice with emotions or whatever's arising. So I'd like to say a few more words about emotions. Such a super important part of our practice. Traditionally, when we talk about effort, I didn't give you a traditional effort talk yesterday, but traditionally in Buddhism, when we talk about effort, what we're trying to do is to strengthen and nourish wholesome mind states and to discourage and abandon unwholesome mind states. And mostly I didn't talk about that because then we get this idea in our minds that we're supposed to hold on to pleasant mind states and get rid of unpleasant ones, which is not actually the way to accomplish that task. The way is through mindfulness, through mindful connection and intimacy. So as we move towards whatever mind state or emotion is arising and get to know it really well, if it's wholesome, it'll actually strengthen. So like metta in the evening, we keep coming back to metta over and over again, getting to know it in order to strengthen it. And if it's an unhelpful, afflictive emotion like anger or fear or lust, or then we mindfulness actually disempowers it on its own. We don't have to do it. We start to see through the stories and the stickiness of these unwholesome, unhelpful mind states. And what happens over time, especially with the afflictive mind states, is that they become lighter, they become less dense, and we can actually play with our own minds. We don't take them so seriously. What we're trying to see in Vipassana with everything that we connect with is the universal characteristics. So the universal characteristics of life are change, stress, and suffering when we try to control things and contract around things. And not self. Not self means that we start to see emotions not as kind of our personal property and our personal problem and our personal chore, but actually we start to see them as nature, part of nature. That they're just how life is manifesting in this moment. They're life. And that we don't have to get enclosed in them, you could say. And so a great way to start is with the body, because you will have noticed that the stories are sticky when there's emotion. The stories are sticky and convincing. That's the job of the mind when an emotion's present. So we start with the body as a way to be with the emotion, and maybe with some stability and mindfulness. Like I said, we're not so interested in the story. If you find yourself going, why is this happening? That's a different investigation, can be helpful. But the one we're interested in is what is happening and how is it unfolding? What and how, not why. And, as I said, it's so important also to know how to get out of an emotion. So if we're in a vortex, not an uncommon happening on a retreat, something grabs you, right, and you're just going in this vortex and you're going down. Your job at that point is usually not to investigate, but to get out. How do you get out? How do we exit an unhelpful mind state? That's really, really important to know. It actually makes it safe to investigate it if we know we can get out of it. And so, like I said, we could go back to our anchor. That's usually not going to be enough, but it might be, or we can open our eyes or stand up. Maybe during walking meditation, we walk more with more energy to help us kind of let some of that energy out. So we find what's helpful for exiting. And then with the intense ones, we might touch in for a minute and then move away. Touch in for a minute, move away. We're back to sustainability. We're not trying to like go into our deepest, darkest places, because usually when we have that motivation, our real motivation is to blast this one out of here. And that's not what we're trying to do. So we do it sustainably. And so we had a question that's kind of related to this. All right, so the report that we have gotten is that there is banana hoarding going on. And somebody wondered if this was related to scarcity thinking, and it's possible. What happens on retreat or in life is an experience my teacher calls karmic knot. And a karmic knot is this patterning. It's really a pattern, but the word knot somehow grabs our attention. The karmic knot is like a tangle of beliefs, thoughts, and emotions that's heavily conditioned, usually set in very, very young as a way to make sense out of the world and cope with this wild world. If our childhood wasn't particularly safe, the karmic knots might be tighter, protective. And so scarcity thinking could be one of those. It's a protective, I got to make sure I get enough because there's not enough for me. So that could be a karmic knot. There's not enough for me. Or there won't be. Or another karmic knot, really common, is I'm not good enough. And so that might manifest as perfectionism, anxiety, just that thought, I'm not good enough, I have to prove myself, I have to work harder, like all of that, like tangled together. Maybe shame, maybe fear in there too, and that knot. And so we start, before we really look around, we live within the worldview of our karmic knot, and we believe it, and we act out of it. So maybe we hoard bananas. I don't know if that's actually going on. That's a perception in the note, but anyway. A key that a karmic knot is happening is when current reality doesn't quite line up to what you're thinking. So for me, I've had this patterning. I've worked with it. And one time I was on a 3-month retreat, and they were cooking for about 130 people. And I was fourth in line for lunch, and the thought going through my head was, there won't be enough for me. I was like, wow, seems unlikely that that's going to happen here. You know, so you start to see that these thoughts are just old patterns that get triggered by certain situations. And then once we start to be mindful of them, and often that includes feeling the pain of them, then we start to have gaps where we might see the world more freshly. I see we update the hard drive. So maybe there actually is enough for me. We start to consider possibilities outside of the knot. But again, it happens not because we're like, go away. We usually hate our karmic knots. It's usually like, oh, no, not that again. I've been meditating for 15 years. Why is that still happening? No, we learn intimacy with the knot to really know how it functions. And then that starts to loosen the tangles. So I think we have time for a question or two. If you have any questions about the instructions or anything that is happening in your meditation, and maybe we'll leave the questions for people who don't have a group today, since the people in groups will have an opportunity. So if you have anything that you're wondering about, Yes.
It seems that to deal with an emotion, you need to name it. That seems like a thought process.
So the question is, it seems, I mentioned that to be with an emotion, it's helpful to name it, but that seems to be a thought process. First of all, if we find ourselves trying to think too much about what emotion it is, then we just let that go. We can just say something, right? Some emotion. We are, in some ways, using the cognitive mind in service of the intimacy. And often it's helpful to name the emotion because it actually helps us get out of the amygdala relationship with the emotion, the kind of reactivity. It starts to give us some hope to be able to see. That would be the purpose of the naming. But yeah, if it just leads to a lot of thought, don't do it. You don't have to do it. You can do it sometimes, do it not other times. You can see what the difference for you is when you name it and when you don't. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, yeah. So the question was about having a kind of calm and an expansive maybe period with the mind, heart, and then that was followed by the heart going, what did you just do? Is that safe? I mean, basically, you didn't say it that way, but that's how I say it. You know, the heart, there's such an openness when we experience calm and tranquility and even bliss or whatever. And we experience those because the heart is undefended at that time. And so then it's really natural that our systems are going to want to kind of back up and check out whether that was an okay thing to do or not. That's what's happening. Your nervous system is like, was that all right? But the way it does it is kind of our usual habitual, maybe anxiety or fear or restlessness, anxiety. Really, those are the common kind of manifestations. And then you said, you know, you're trying to say to your heart, it's okay. And then your heart's like, no, it isn't. Don't try to tell me what's okay. So you can meet that experience of restlessness or anxiety with kindness also and mindfulness. Oh, yeah, this is the way it is right now. But mostly I think you're just wanting to know that that's normal, and it is, and it's out of your control. Because we think, oh, what did I do wrong? How can I get back there? Yeah, you can't make it happen. It's a great question. We're really exploring this heart and how it relates to the world. And again, not trying to impose on it, but actually listen. So I think, great question, thank you. And I think we will move on. Okay, so a few announcements. If a note we receive is not signed, we won't be able to respond to it. So that happens. Sign your notes, in other words. And then if you do write a note, really think before writing, like maybe give it like 3 times that you feel like you need to write the note and then write it. Like let it simmer. And if there's something happening in your meditation practice that you're worried about, yes, please do contact us because we want to be here for you. But otherwise, kind of let it simmer a while and see if it actually needs, the note needs to be written. There's a request to hit the bell softly in the hallways. I would say except for the wake-up bell. The wake-up bell, you probably need to hit it so people can hear and will wake up. But I know it's fun to hit give the bell a whack. But maybe not too hard when people are kind of quietly walking in the hall. You can just, or in the hallways, you can just check that out. It's good to check the board once a day anyway, because sometimes we will be leaving you a note about something, and just check it. You don't need to check it after every sitting, even though sometimes that happens. But we don't recommend, actually, that you check it after every sitting. It's a really interesting experiment, right? You go out of the hall, there's that board. You're like, and like, what's it like to not actually look at the board? You can play with that. What are we wanting, right? It's such a moment. We really should move the board, but that's another discussion. And then the next, last announcement is that all these talks will be available after the retreat on dharmaseed.org, which is a freely accessible website. Most occasionally we won't like what we said and we won't put it up, but usually we at least make it accessible to you guys. And so if you hear a story you like or a quote you like, don't worry, you can after the retreat listen again and get that kind of information.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.